So I am really thankful for this technology that has allowed us to do this. And I am also looking forward to continue this series of project or this project next year. And I hope that from now until September, that we will have even better technology that will allow us to not only hear one another, but also to see one another. So during the summer, we will keep our antenna open for any new technology that can manifest to help us be better connected together. You have received with the announcement of this talk the program for next year, and the program for next year you have all the dates and you have also all the subject, and the titles have been made up according to how we thought of sharing with you, studying together with you the Satipatthana Sutra. The Satipatthana Sutra is a very important sutra for practice, and I will. It is always a pleasure to come back to that that sutra. So I will be. I'm looking forward to it in order to relearn it and also to deepen my practice on the Four Establishment. The Four Establishment is a. Is the way of practice, and when we practice, we like to know what it is that we are practicing for, and what it is that we are practicing for, we have learned it during this whole year with the Four Noble Truths and with the Eightfold Path. So I don't know if you have heard me speak on the first talk, and even in some other, in many other following occasions, but I have often stressed that this sutra that we have learned together, and the Four Noble Truths, is the most important teaching of the Buddha. When we read together this morning between ourselves here in Sangha, we read the Dhammakakkappavattana Sutra, the discourse on turning the wheel of the Dhamma. It is every time I read that sutra, I really felt as if I was there among the five, or with the five first disciples of the Buddha, and to hear him say how he sees the world, how he has got that insight, how he has got that complete liberation, and how he understood how he found out what he was looking for throughout his search and his quest, and how convincing and how sure he was in front of the five friends, the five ascetic friends he had in the beginning, and also how Khandana, listening to that first talk, got fully enlightened, and how also wonderfully the whole world and all the cosmos shook, and every world around, across in the universe recognized that in our world, in this world, in the human realm, somebody, Shakyamuni Buddha, has got that enlightenment, and it shook the whole universe. And every time I read that sentence, I feel shivers in my spine, and I still feel that now speaking to you about that image. And so that was the most important teaching, and the Buddha has often repeated that, and it was his first talk, it was his first teaching. It was his first testimonial of his insight, but it was also the last teaching, and in the last teaching that he gave before crossing and before Parinirvana was to say again, in my 45 years of teaching, I have taught only one thing, and I have taught only about the truth of suffering and the way out of suffering, and that was the only teaching that I have given in all my life. And when we remember that, and when we know what the Buddha, how the Buddha taught, and how our teacher Thinyakhan is teaching, we can see that at the base of it all, at the base of all the 18 or the 48,000 or I don't know how many million Dhamma doors that have been opened, they are all meant to practice the four mindfulness training and the 12 turnings of the wheel. All the Dhamma doors are meant only for that reality, or for that thing, and that is to help us recognize and get over, or to save us, or to relieve us from our suffering. And that is the lesson that I try to always remember, always keep remembering when I am learning, or when I'm practicing, or when I'm teaching Buddhism. And in that line, I also always remember my teacher teaching when he, when I attended the 21-day retreat where he taught the Four Noble Truths. And I do not remember which year it was, but that was in a 21-day retreat in France, in Plum Village. And the retreat name was the Heart of the Buddha. And somebody asked me if I want to study Buddhism according to Thinyakhan, where should I go and what should I be learning? I have no hesitation in saying, if there is one book that you want to learn from my teacher, that would be the Heart of the Buddhist Teachings. And the Heart of the Buddhist Teaching has been pulled out from that 21-day retreat, and you will find out in it all the basic teachings that the Buddha has taught, and to learn and to practice and to master the concept or the teachings that are in that book is something that I would, well, I'm still trying to do, because it is so profound, and it is an endless teaching. And every time I have the chance to come back to that book, I find new things every time I come back to. So if you have been following this first year of study and practice, if you like the Four Noble Truths, if you like the 12 Turnings of the Wheel, if you want to study more about that, about the Four Noble Truths, please do give yourself that wonderful gift. And it is called, again, the Heart of the Buddhist Teaching. Now it exists in light cover, and it is really not expensive, like less than $10. And if you buy it on Kindle, it is even less. So that book is my one of my best stand books. So again, to come back to that teaching, when my teacher, I still remember, gave the opening talk in that retreat, he said that if you want the Buddha, if you want to get the Buddha's help in order to help you to get out, to transcend, or to solve, or to relieve, or to get out of your suffering, you have to trust the Buddha, and you have to come to him with your heart open, and you have to open your heart up in order to show the Buddha your suffering. And you come to the Buddha and you say, Lord Buddha, I am Chen Hui, I am your disciple, I am I love you, I said, and I need your help. I need your help because I suffer so much, and this is my suffering. And unless we open up our heart, unless we can have trust in the Buddha, unless we can show him what our suffering is, what it is about, it will be very difficult for us to do anything ahead for him even to do anything in order to be able to help us. And that's how I see the first noble truth, but that's how I see the first two turning of the wheel. This is my suffering. And to open it up so that the Buddha can look at it, or the Buddha inside of us, or the Buddha outside, or whoever your Buddha is. But there you need to have a Buddha in order to come to, in order to be able to open up your heart and show him, show her your suffering. Identify it, show it out, and ask his help in order to be able to look at it and also to understand. And that is the first turning of the wheel. And that is the second turning of the wheel. And when we are with the Buddha, when we are with our heart open, that's the only way that we can ask for him, her to help us in order to be able to understand our suffering. And that is the first effort that we need to do to understand. And once we understand, then the code will appear and etc. But the most important thing still is the first noble truth, and we have to do the first three segment element of the first noble truth. And once we do that, then we take that skill or that that way of doing that we have developed, practicing the first noble truth, we can bring it to the second, to the third, and to the fourth. And today, because it is the last talk, we are already with the we are now in the turn in the fourth, in the fourth of the four noble truths, and we have studied the eightfold noble path, and we have also studied the first six of the eightfold path, and now for today, in order to complete the whole cycle, we would need to study the last two that I have replaced, and that would be the right livelihood and the right concentration. I think that because we are in Thinking Han practice, and because we are following his teaching and his way, and his way is the way of engaged Buddhism, because we are a lay practitioner, because we are OI brothers and sisters, we are member of the Order of Interbeing, and Order of Interbeing is about engaged Buddhism. So it is not our practice. It's not about going in the forest and hide ourselves in, or go to high mountains and practice in our private hut. But we need to be in daily life. We need to engage into society first of all in order to be able to support our family, to support ourselves, to pay the electric bill and to pay for the gas in our car. It costs more and more. And that's the hard difficulty that my brothers and sisters in the order are facing every day, and also myself, because I have been struggling with that question from the time I have met with my teacher that was more than 25 years ago. And when I met him, I was in deep pain. I was struggling to get out of a deep depression that was caused by stress at work. And the lesson that was given to me, or that I retained, there were so many lessons, but the one that I retained after that first retreat was release your cow, let your cow go, free yourself, lead a simpler life, etc. And 25, 28, 30 years after, I still see that as such a wise and profound advice. And I really think that if I could have done a better job 25 years ago in releasing my cow, in getting a simpler life, it would have made my life much easier. But it is so difficult to do, and I had a lot of difficulty identifying the cows that I needed to keep and the cows that I could release, and etc. So the cow releasing is still for me one of the first condition in order for us to be able to practice right livelihood. If we have many cows, well, as many of us very fortunately or unfortunately have, then the more livelihood we need, and the more difficult it is for us to be or to find the right livelihood. When we lead a simple life, when we do not need so much material resource or income, it will be easier for us to be more selective in the livelihood we are engaging into, and it will be easier to find a livelihood that is in line with our way of life, or with our vocation, with our calling, with our ideal of life. But being where we are, and we still cannot just release them without also having to take care of them after they have left us. So maybe the best idea is to start by identifying them and counting them and listing them out, and have a good inventory of our herd, of our pupu. So as a good cowboy, or as a good shepherd dog, we know exactly how many cattle we have in our tupo, so that we can we know that what we are. And I think that just listing them out is already a very good way to start that inventory that may eventually lead us into being able to identify which one are more or less critical, and start identifying the one that we can free up, so that we can be freer. And in order to be able to do that, we still need to hang on to life and to whatever it is that we need in order to be able to do that work. And the only way to do that is to be there. And whatever work we engage to, whatever occupation we need to do in order to be able to sustain our livelihood, taking care of our family, taking care of the cows that we still have in our stable, we need to be wherever we are. And so we may be an engineer working for an employer, like I was 1 year ago, working as a project manager for the Canadian Forces. That was my livelihood, And many friends who know me are very surprised when I mention to them that I am working for a force that are fighting in Afghanistan, and not only as a peace force that we have been in Canada, but as a true real fighting force. And our forces were really out there running after and shooting people. And so they were very surprised, and they say, how can Dharma teacher in Thai tradition work for an organization that is training its member to kill and etc. And when I have those type of questions, it is always a struggle for me. And all that time, there was always a voice in me telling me, asking me, are you sure that what you do is according to your ideal of life? And I don't know if it is my mind playing tricks on me, but I, most of the time, I could answer that yes, this is fully in accord with my training and my ideal of life, because I'm there in order to because I am there doing a job that needs to be done, that had to be done. And whether I am there doing it or not, there would still be somebody who will be there to do it. And if it is not me, they will find somebody who can be better, less paid, or more efficient, or whatever, or not. But that would not have prevented, or my presence is not that essential condition that would make it go ahead or not, or is even a condition for success of the project. So I was trying all the time I was in that job to be as mindful as I can, to be to try to bring as much mindfulness, as much love and compassion into my work environment, to bring or to try to look at everything that I see and that is positive in what my work can bring into up to my employer, to the people of Canada, and to the free world. And also to myself. Because that was a place that was very easy for me to practice the fourth mindfulness training of the 14 mindfulness training, and that is to be in touch with suffering. So it was very easy for me to looking at all our soldiers, our young soldiers coming back wounded or losing their foot or losing their mind, and being stuck with PTSD and all those very profound wounds in their mind was always a big bell of mindfulness for me, keeping me in touch with suffering where it is. And so I am not sure if my livelihood was that right as I wished that I had wanted to, but I have tried my best. And I think that right livelihood is not so much of being in such a trade or such a position, but it is more about being mindful and making the best we can in whatever, wherever position we are put in. I know that I have been in that position thanks to many, many other conditions, and it is not only my choice, but it is also many other conditions putting me there. And whatever condition I find myself in, the best or the duty that I have to do in order to be practicing right livelihood is to really be present and to be mindful of what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and what are the effects of the work or of my presence can bring. And sometimes I remember very small things that I can learn from our best teachers, and I can give an example of how I'm looking at my work when I was in it. It was, for example, to remember how Mother Teresa talked about her own life and her own practice, and she said, "I'm not here to do great things, I'm only here to do very small things." And my practice and my way of doing things is to act and to live in such a way that every person I meet in my day is feeling just a little bit better than when I met them, when I first meet them. So after I've met somebody and they leave me, that they be just a little bit better. And just doing that was so difficult and was something that I was trying to do and that I'm still trying to do now, that I am out of that job and that I am trying now to find a new livelihood. And it is still my it is still my practice, and it's still a practice that I will try to keep or to remember when I will be engaging in my new career or in any other work, to be mindful wherever I am, in order to be able to know what it is that I'm doing, why am I doing it, and how I'm doing it, and how it is that I can make a difference wherever I am, and make a difference in the life of everybody that I will have a chance to meet. It does not need to be, and it will not be a life-transforming or life transformation or an enlightenment. But if they can all only feel just a little bit better after meeting me, I would feel so thankful and so great. And that's what I would like to be doing now with my new livelihood. And many of you know that I have been, that I'm now retired, and that I am trying to live the life of a wandering monk by going by plane, waiting in airport, trying to walk as mindfully as I can between flight when we are being grounded. I have met so many wonderful people also now doing traveling for retreats, because when I used to just be able to come in a Friday night and leaving on a Sunday night to be on a red-eye flight, now I can have more time and spend more time with friends at every sangha I visit. And it has been really the best time in my life to be able to meet with all the friends in the practice in sanghas everywhere. So thank you to all the friends that I have had the chance to meet lately. So for me, right livelihood is about being mindful, being aware, being present in our daily life, in our daily situation, in order to be fully aware of where it is that we are and what it is that we are doing, why we are doing it, and how we are doing it, And in order to be practicing right livelihood, is to do the best that we can with the position in the place that we are. Because I believe that being where we are is not a coincidence, but it is there because we are meant to be there. And if we are meant to be there, to be practicing right livelihood, where we are meant to be, is to be fully mindful and grateful for the chance that we have in order to be in the job that we are, and to give the best of our talents and resources wherever we are there, and to practice in order to transform the environment of work where we are, with our mindful speech, with our walking, with our mindful speech, with our compassionate listening, with all of that, and just by being present, by being able to listen deeply and to speak compassionately in the meeting, can make a big difference already. So do not forget that. Please do not forget that wherever we are, we can make that place a place of practice, and we can transform that place of work where we are into a holy place, into nothing less than a practice center. And I will even push that even further. Your work environment is a true practice center, because that is where we spend 8 hours of our life, on 10 hours or 12 hours of our daily life. That's where we spend the most of our time. That's where we spend the most of our energy. And if we cannot make that place a holy place, if we cannot make that place an altar or a practice center, then we are losing 80% of our life in time, in the time that we can use as true practice. But what is our practice? Our practice is to be where suffering is, in order to be able to relieve suffering. And the suffering is not only the suffering of others. I have here Sister Milleray, who is a physician, and all of her patients who come to see her come because they're suffering. And she's there in order to be able to relieve the suffering by practicing the best she can. But she is also trying to not only do her profession and help solve suffering for others, but also to watch and to look at herself also, because she knows very well that if she is not well, it is impossible for her to be able to be her best in order to be able to serve her patient. And so when we are practicing together, when I'm seeing her, when I sometimes have a chance to be with her outside of her work or outside of our noble silence in days of mindfulness, I always try to remind her that healthcare professionals need to care for themselves, because they do not know how to do that. And they have to do that because they have been trained to do it otherwise. They've been trained only to take care of others, but they have not been trained in order to take care of themselves. And that is a practice that I always try to remind my friends who are in the healthcare business. Now we have only a few few moments left, and the next branch of the Eightfold Path that I was about to that I had to address today is the right concentration. Right concentration. What is concentration? What is right concentration? And what is less right concentration? And what is left concentration? What is the middle concentration? But it is when we are speaking about concentration and we are speaking about right concentration, it is that concentration that will help us to get closer to the to where we want to go. And if we come back to the Four Noble Truths, we will remember that all of the teachings of the Buddha has only one flavor, and that is the flavor of liberation, the flavor of liberating ourselves from suffering. And so how do we practice right concentration? It is to practice the concentration that can help us understand the root and the cause of our suffering, and understanding the root and the cause of our suffering in order to be able to know how to find the way, how to practice the way in order to understand and to transcend the cause of the suffering that has been binding us and tying us down centuries and generations after generations. And when I am talking about right concentration and liberation, I always remember that first sentence that the Buddha set out when after he got enlightened. They, it's so easy, because we just have to identify the warden of the prison, and we grab him, and the wall of the prison will fall down, and we will be completely free. And yet, why is it that people cannot understand that, and they just come back lifetime after lifetime and stay in that circle of life and death endlessly? And so how did the Buddha came to that conclusion, or how it is still that place that we want to get to, that enlightenment, that big light, that big bang, that big everything, anything, and that the Buddha witnessed, that the Buddha went through, and that the Buddha is trying to teach to us? This is how to look at, this is how to do it in order to be able to get where I was. And everybody can do it, because we already have it inside of us. And when our teacher is teaching us, he's saying things in different words, and it is not any different from the initial message of that initial message of the Buddha, that we can do it, and that it is not in the future, that it is not in some places far away, but it is right here under our feet. And if we can make a step, the kingdom will appear. The Pure Land is here or never. And all of the teachings of the Buddha are now being said by Thai in a very different way, but still with that same essence, with that same understanding, that we have the capacity to do it, that the Buddha and teachers over many generations, and our teacher has taken that message, has taken that essence, has taken all those teachings, and has put them into very concrete and easy way for us to practice in order to be able to make that step, in order to have the right concentration that will lead to understanding and that will lead to insight. So if you remember those three things that we usually see when we are in any of Thai's monastery, Smriti, Samadhi, Prajna. So Smriti is a sati, is mindfulness. Mindfulness that we are practicing in everything that we are doing in our daily life, the way that we wake up in the morning, the way we are doing our first step, the way we are breathing and smiling, waiting for the bus, the way all of those teaching, all of those practices, how to listen to the song of the bell, how to look at the blue sky and be in touch, how to look at the full moon that we had 2 days ago that was so beautiful in the empty sky, etc. All the practices that we can do anytime, every time, And if we can keep that mindfulness alive, it will give us a lot of joy, a lot of peace, and that will be the food, the motivation, the encouragement for us to come back and come back and come back to that practice of mindfulness that keeps us there and be happy and to be nourishing and to be nourished with all that is happening. And with all that food that we have, it gives us the energy to be concentrated, and we will know what to concentrate on. And once we know what we are to concentrate on, we will be able to taste the truth. We will have the sword of the Samantabhadra cutting off and revealing reality, and the reality that the sword of Manjushri is revealing to us is nothing less but that whole inside, that complete inside, that understanding that is liberating, because that understanding is what is also what the Buddha has witnessed, and that got him liberated, and also what he has been teaching us for all this lifetime, and that Thay has been also spending all his life trying to teach us in every possible way he could. And for me, to practice right concentration is to practice right mindfulness, and to practice right mindfulness is to practice mindfulness as it is taught by our teacher, is to be mindful, happy, smiling in every moment of our daily life. And the last teaching that our teacher has also taught us some maybe 2 years ago, this moment is a happy moment, and if we can make each moment of our daily life a happy moment, that is the right practice of right mindfulness, and that will lead to right concentration. So now we have 5 minutes left. I think that I will ask for your authorization to stop here. And I don't know if Brother Antonio can direct us in order to mute or unmute any sangha of his choice, but only unmute the sangha that will be speaking, so that we won't get into too much echo. I can take some questions, and the sangha that do not need to ask questions, or that do not need to hear, to participate or listen into the question period that will follow, or that you, because you are too hungry and you need to go for lunch, I can understand also. So please feel free to disconnect if you need to get into your next activity, and I will be here with any other sangha who wants to ask questions and who wants to stay behind to listen into the Q&A, and I will stay for, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes because my friend here are also
this is Antonio bowing in. Thank you, Brother Chen Wei, for your beautiful talk. I think the best way to handle questions at this point is if a sangha wants to ask a question, if you could please type in the chat box that you would like to speak, and then I will be happy to unmute you so that you can speak. So please type in the chat box. Antonio bowing out. Thank you, brother. Actually, we do have someone here who is wanting to ask a question. So I will pass the mic over to our sister Patricia. No? Oh, she wants me to ask the question for her. Hold on, please. I'll be right back. This is Antonio bowing in. Our sister Patricia's question is the following. We live in a country that is very prosperous, and a lot of our prosperity is due to the fact that we wage war. And so the dilemma is, as a citizen of the country where one works and produces income to fund the wars, there is a desire or a question. That's the question, actually. Do we stay and continue to fund the wars that we have no control over, or do we move to another country where there are no wars and then our livelihood, our right livelihood, will not be funding wars? Antonio bowing out.
This is Chen Hui bowing in. Thank you, Sister Patricia. Thank you, Blue Ocean Sangha, for that question. If you find such a country, please let me know, and I will join you if you can go there. Unfortunately, I do not know of any country that is not contributing in one way or another to all the wars that are going on right now in the planet. Canada used to be that a peace haven that many American during the American War was hiding into. And I know that France in America during the 60s have immigrated north and hid in Canada in order to be able to not to be drafted and not to participate directly in the Vietnam War. So that is one way that France at that time were doing. I do not know if that situation is still right or true in Canada. But because we know about interbeing and we know about interdependence, we know that even when a country is not directly involved in the war, for example, when Canada was very proudly pretending in the world that they are they wore blue bonnet because they were representing the name United Nations in order to be the peacekeeping force. Well, I can tell you that all that time where we proudly say that we were the peacekeeper of the world, we were also at the same time building F-18 and many of the warfare that was equipping all the armies and the Air Force and the Navy of the world and of the states that were killing directly. So we were not, even when we were that peacekeeping force, clean our hands ourselves. And so I am very sorry to not have an answer or a direct answer. That is why I am really true to myself when I'm asking you. If you find a way, please share it with me. It can be also a wonderful way for us to engage into more Dharma discussion on the topic on how do we engage into right livelihood and how can we not contribute into the war that are being waged and etc. So My proposal would be to continue to practice mindful living, to be practicing stopping, to be practicing smiling, to be practicing peace walk, to be and to not forget that peace starts in with self, and to not forget that our teacher mantra is peace in oneself, a peace in the world, and being the peace builder that he has been for all his life. His teaching, his practice is still to start with self at home, in our heart, and to practice in order to be peaceful and not at war inside of us, so that we can know better. We will find ways in order to be able to lead the life that can be not contributing or void of suffering caused by wars that are being waged. Can we bow out?
This is Antonio bowing in. Lo Shin Sangha is very grateful. Thank you, Brother Chen Wei, for your wonderful answer. Antonio bowing out.
This is Plum Blossom Sangha bowing out. Thank you, Chen Wei. Thank you, Antonio.
We bow to you, Plum Blossom Sangha. Thank you. Are there any...